It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And we have in the studio Terry Snyder sitting in the sun that's pouring in through the window. Welcome, Terry.
Yay, sun.
And we have on the phone line, Zaz Hollander. I hope you're sitting in the sun somewhere.
I'm sitting near the sun.
Near the sun. Yes. Well, we're all near the sun. What is it, 93 million miles? Something.
Right. Relatively speaking.
Well, Zaz, we'd like to begin with you because there's been movement in the Grunewald situation with one defendant being tried, and well, you fill in the details.
So this is the trial in the murder of David Grunewald, who was 16 years old, in November 2016 when he was beaten and then shot in the head and left near the Kinnick River, not found for a couple, 3 weeks. And so there were five teenagers who were charged in some way in the murder, four of them directly with killing him. And the first of those four went to trial in mid-May. And yesterday, after really not lengthy deliberations, a Palmer jury found him guilty on all counts, including murder one. And that even though the testimony during the trial indicated that there's no proof as to who fired that fatal shot that killed David Grunewald. The fingerprint evidence doesn't go that far, but that Eric Allmendinger was basically convicted under Alaska's accomplice liability law, which states that if you have intent and a high level of involvement in the crime, even if you didn't physically do it, sometimes even if you weren't physically there, you could be convicted, and he was. This was obviously a very emotional trial for everybody involved, not only David Grunewald's parents, Ben and Edie Grunewald, who sat through every day of these really difficult proceedings. And I'm a quote-unquote veteran reporter, so I'm just old and have been doing this for a while and have covered a number of trials, and this was the worst in terms of just the daily kind of grueling amount of painful details, and the fact that these are all teenagers involved. And so this ruling sets up, I think, a pretty strong direction for the other, three teenage defendants charged in the murder who now face their own trials. The next one is Dominic Johnson. He's scheduled for, I think, September 24th for his trial to begin. The chatter has been if Eric Allmendinger, who really his involvement in the crime was supplying the gun used in the pistol whipping and the camper that in which that occurred, and then being a bystander basically for the actual murder, if he can be convicted of murder one, then Dominic Johnson, who at least according to Allmendinger was the one who kind of it was his idea to do the beating. He was kind of in charge for the drive out to the Kinnick, and again, according to Allmendinger. And then either Dominic or another defendant, Austin Barrett, actually pulled the trigger. It was Barrett's gun that was used in the fatal shot. So there, during this trial, there was some damning evidence against Dominic Johnson, more so than against Eric Allmendinger in some ways. So the next step would be, legally the assumption that Dominic Johnson doesn't have a very strong case, but we haven't heard all the evidence in his case yet. And then there are two other defendants, Barrett and Brad Renfro, who still have to go to trial. So, the big question is whether plea deals are going to start happening to spare the Grunewalds from going through more trials because this verdict, such a strong verdict for the prosecution, came through, really fairly quickly, but really a painful day yesterday. I know the Grunewalds couldn't comment on the record, but it was pretty clear that this was a I don't know if a good verdict is the right word, but the verdict they were looking for.
When is sentencing, and what kind of sentence does he face at this
point? Sentencing hasn't been scheduled yet, and it depends on whether the prosecution, the Palmer District Attorney, Roman Kalachak, is asking for what are called aggravators, which are based on, what he contends is the kind of elevated level of cruelty/torture that happened during the crime, if Judge Heath, in this case, depends on what aggravators, if any, he signs off on in terms of what kind of sentence. So the next hearing is September 6th, but that's not a sentencing hearing. It's kind of a status hearing. He'll hear the pre-sentencing memorandum and then set sentencing from there. The prosecution was hoping for, I believe, for a sentencing decision before the Johnson trial, and it doesn't look as if the timelines here are going to allow for that.
When do the next trial start?
September 24th at mm-hmm. Dominic Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now one of the comments, well, more than one, I think, has been directed at placing this in the broader context of the criminal justice system and whether this particular act could have been prevented by having some intervention with the people that were involved in it at an earlier time, whether there'd been a previous history of criminal activity, et cetera. Do you want to speak at all to that, Zas?
Well, I mean, that's a lot of speculation. It is true that two of the defendants, one of them, Devin Peterson, who isn't actually charged with murder, but charged and took a plea deal in evidence tampering, he hid the guns that were involved. He provided the gas cans that the teens allegedly used to burn David Grunwald's Bronco off Schrock Road. And Austin Barrett did have criminal records, but there were, and Devin's brother, this is very convoluted, Devin's brother Damien has been charged in a different murder that occurred in Austin, allegedly in Austin Barrett's presence at a trap house in Wasilla where a bunch of these teens were cycling in and out the summer before Grunwald was killed. And so there's some contention that if Peterson or Barrett were incarcerated, then this crime might not have happened. Again, I mean, that's just totally speculation.
Sure,
there was
sure.
one, a different crime that Peterson and Barrett were involved in Eagle River, which involved a guy who they allegedly kidnapped and wanted to get money from. But when they went back to his house, were confronted, I think, by his dad. That case just wasn't strong enough to bring to trial. The DA's office told me. I think that was the closest. When people are arguing that the system failed. But that's not, for example, an SB 91 problem because they were never charged. They never made it into the system, mostly because the witness in that case, the victim, just wasn't reliable enough to stand up to trial. So, I mean, if the system failed, it was kind of the usual problems with the system. But the other three players involved had generally clean records. Almendinger had a completely clean record. And so I think that the bigger red flag here for parents, not just in the Valley, but it would be that, here are all of them were homeless at times. All of them had some problems at home, and except for Grunwald. But, he crossed paths with this group and wasn't telling the truth to his parents about where he was. They didn't know that. He sounds like a fairly regular marijuana smoker by that time, which, doesn't make him a bad person. But, it's a difficult problem, I think, just tracking our kids anymore. And, social media played a major role in this case. The evidence that what seems like a fairly painstaking investigation revealed some of the leading evidence that allowed investigators to kind of pin down these defendants was their phones and their tablets. And where they were when different things occurred, and so it allowed them to corroborate, for example, Almendinger's story. They knew he was finally starting to tell them what they considered the truth when his story matched the story that their devices told.
Wow.
Well, I think what it does, and we have to remember, I have to remember when the events actually occurred, which is back in 2016. And I'm reminded about that, and I guess the takeaway in part is that on the surface, in any community, and Palmer's a pretty quiet community, generally speaking, to have someone lift up the cover and say, "Well, this is an extreme example of what has been going on," but probably not an anomaly, probably not the only house and group of students that are involved in short of murder. And I guess that is the piece that at some point, whether it's begun already, and I'm not sure whether the various groups that are dealing with homelessness, et cetera, will take this as a incentive, if you will, a catalyst for an even stronger look. I have the sense that that will happen, but...
Zaz, do you think there'll be any civil lawsuits that come from this?
Oh, there's already one. I actually haven't checked it recently to find out if there's any updates, but David Grunwald's father, Ben, has sued the parents of the teenagers who supplied the guns involved in this crime. And it's actually one. He was named during the trial. His name was Garrett Canada, who moved to Fairbanks but lived in the Valley. And he was the source of both those guns, which were stolen from different people. And, you know, Garrett Canada was involved with, came across teenagers who had access to both of these weapons. I can't remember the source of one, but one was stolen by the teenage daughter of the owner, the registered owner, both the weapons were originally purchased legally and then were taken by teenagers in the family, I think, for both, and then were obtained by Garrett Canada because he knew these teenagers, and then Canada sold one to Austin Barrett and gave the other one to Almendinger. I may be flipping that around. One of the teenagers involved in this crime bought the gun. The other one was given the gun and then maybe gave $100 later. But both of them came from Garrett Canada. And that also raises the level of this group of teenagers, that they're buying weapons on the street. But again, I mean, with the level of theft and weapons theft going on, in the Valley and around Alaska and probably around the country, there are these stolen weapons floating around, and they tend to fall into the wrong hands.
Wow. Well, I just want to say, Zaz, you did a really good job reporting it. It was really hard to read in some regards, and I'm sure it was even harder to write. So bravo on following this, and you deserve a rest after this.
Right, a little reprieve before the next one begins.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm turning. I should say that there's been really good coverage on a number of fronts, and Heather at KTVA did a great job with her coverage as well. And they were live streaming the trial, which I've never seen before. They haven't done before. And there was at one point, yesterday's verdict was probably very high, but at one point, they their Facebook live stream was the fourth highest rated in the country for that day. So the most popular, fourth most popular.
So they allowed that in the courtroom, huh?
Yep, Judge Heath allowed that and then determined that KTVA would be the only camera, so would be supplying a feed.
Exclusive.
Media. The print media, the Frontiers was there, we were there. But in terms of the TV media, that was KTVA was it, because they got their request in first.
Oh, wow.
Very, 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 very understanding.
And so there were very graphic images that were shown, and there was some grumbling about, I can't believe KTVA is showing, pictures of David Grunwald's body, of his autopsy results, of the pictures of his head. And that's what you get when you watch a live murder trial.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, okay. For everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's take a little reprieve of a break and talk about plastic bags. It was my pleasure to have interviewed the city manager of the city of Palmer today. And I asked him the big question. Okay, this title, plastic bag ban, really can be interpreted a variety of ways, and in many respects is misleading, because the way it plays out, there are a lot of plastic bags that are continuing to be used and will be past the initiation date, which is the 1st of January here in the city of Palmer. So if you go into the store and you go to the produce section and you're going to pick up the broccoli that you love, you'll put it in a plastic bag and so on. But the bags that hang at the checkout place in that classic location there, where if you haven't brought your own bag, you would use those, will not be there to be used primarily. The other interesting thing about this is that if you are comparing Wasilla and Palmer, there are two major differences here, of course. One, Wasilla was out of the gate sooner, and therefore on the 1st of July, their ban will go into effect. And the second thing is the numbers. The Wasilla's plastic bag ban is for 2.5 millimeter bags. Hmm. Palmer's is for 4 millimeter bags. So I asked the question of the assembled panel, which is the more rigid ban, if you will?
I'd say probably Palmer, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's
a heavier
bag.
Do you agree with that, Zaz?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're going, and at first it you know, you looked and you said, okay, which one is more serious or including a larger number of bags? Because you have all kinds of things, such as bags that have variable thicknesses. In other words, they may start out at being something like 2.25, and then they go to 3.75 or something, a different part of the bag. And so it's a little complicated, but nonetheless, these are based, it appears, on bans that have been successful in other places, and that's what's going to be happening here. I just wanted to clear up maybe some of the misconceptions about the plastic bag ban. Do you have anything that you want to ask about that?
Well, I just think that the ones everybody's really has in their mind when they think about the problems that it causes are the white ones that you would traditionally get when you check out that are caught in the trees and fences and along the road and stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see what the valley looks like next year when that takes effect. Although you have to also understand that the borough does not have this ban, and there is a lot of acreage between the cities. And so places like Three Bears and that are on the in the borough will not be covered with this ban. Whether they voluntarily do it, that's one thing. But you should see some improvement in the city. So we'll have to check back on that in about a year.
I might also add that there was interest from the legislature about what was happening in Palmer. I had communication, if you remember, from Senator Josephson.
Representative.
Had been a proponent of a statewide ban with a different taxing routine associated. His office was particularly interested in our coverage on what was happening here. And I think it's safe to say that when the next session begins, there may well be a statewide look at what you can do with bags, given that we have the lead of a number of cities that have moved ahead. Of course, it's a question of what will happen in Anchorage.
Right.
Okay. Well, let us turn then to what today is a moving target, and that is the primary deadline that will be coming up about the time we broadcast. So next week we'll be able to look back and say, well, what's happening? I'd like to draw attention, though, to one name that I found listed in the primary list already, Edie Grunewald. Of course, we've talked about her and her son earlier today. She's listed as a candidate for lieutenant governor as a Republican in the Alaskan Republican Party primary. There are a lot of other names there, too, some well-known to us. The lieutenant governor list includes Lynn Gaddis, who has been in the legislature and been a local political figure, and Kevin Meyer, Gary Stevens, Stephen Wright, and Sharon Jackson. So at the present time, that's the list of people that are there. Now, when we turn to the governor list, I think, in some respects, more interesting in that everyone seems to be waiting for one person to make a decision, and that, of course, is Mark Begich. He is not listed as having already thrown his hat in the ring and submitted the paperwork and been part of this list. Mike Donlevy, a former Alaskan Senate political figure, has long ago said yes, he was running for governor. The present governor is who would, it appears, be waiting for Mark Begich to make a decision to decide whether he will run in the Democratic primary or not? That's the major issue, a major question.
It's being fairly widely reported this morning that, he does plan to run.
Mark Begich.
That's right.
Okay. I've heard that, but we don't have the proof, which is...
They have till 5 p.m. today.
Yeah. So your information, Zaz, then is that it looks like Mark Begich will run, and that will, of course, throw this whole thing into a very different place compared to if he were not running.
And will Rock Walker do what he did before and run as an independent, which, you know, he could do.
So let's see if we can get a hold of David Cheesham. Hold on a moment. David, are you there?
Yes. Hello.
Well, David Cheesham. David Cheesham, for those listeners who may not be aware, and you're David is riding his bicycle from St. Louis, Missouri, west. Where are you located right now?
Well, I'm in Beach, North Dakota, about 4 miles from the border to Montana. Looking around at the weather, I think the weather looks fine. The app, some of them are saying that there's a severe thunderstorm watch, but I think I'm all right for the 11 miles to Weibow.
So this is a big...
This is
a big change. You'll be going out of North Dakota and into Montana. So I was hoping that you'd be able to call in and just comment that in the time over the past 2 months, as you've been riding your bicycle through the heartland, in some ways, of the United States, has there been anything in particular that you noticed that people are mostly focused on? Here in Alaska, we have our own topics, but I was curious about what kind of things you heard in restaurants or newspapers or whatever.
Well, not the issues. Not, I haven't heard people talk politics as much. They've been talking about their crops and the crops they're going to plant and you know, down, you know, further south. Up here is the alfalfa. So that in the northern part of North Dakota, it's been drier the last few years. And so I just had a conversation a half hour ago. They were talking about how last year they had to go all the way to Rapid City to order alfalfa, for the cattle. And just those kind of simple everyday concerns are what I'm hearing people talk about. And, of course, I've been the object of a lot of generosity and help when I needed it, and that's been a big part. But I think people are just, if they are working, then they're working, you know, concentrating on their job.
Do you have people asking you any particular questions about your being from Alaska and what it's like up here?
No, not much. I think that, of course, I'm in an area that the cold in Alaska wouldn't surprise anybody here. Alaska's not that different from here. I had a great conversation yesterday. Now, this is maybe one of the coolest things to happen in the trip so far. I'm riding along this field. I noticed yesterday that fewer fences in the fields are still growing and everything. And then this man is walking with a wooden walking stick, just coming out the middle of the field, and he waves me down and just chats, and he said that he just, whenever he gets 4 days off, he takes a hike, and he plans it out, and his wife picks him up on the highway at a certain place, and he was getting ready to retire. He was a minister and a preacher, and just thinking about how he could do that for more than 4 days at a time. It's just that old tradition of the walkabout. It was really fun to see someone do that, and there's a kind of quality of contentedness and people who are able to just start at one point and walk all day to the next point.
Well, we have Zaz and Terry here. Zaz, do you have any questions for David on his trip here?
How do your legs feel, David?
Legs? You know, there's just this wonderful feeling of like just before a Charlie horse all the time.
All the time. Okay. Terry, question.
Oh, I don't have a question, but I just want to say I'm looking forward to the book.
Oh, very good. Well, you know, I there's a lot of places with no smoking ordinances.
We finally have ours. I hope you heard.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's a lot of hard work went into that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, David, want to thank you for calling in and sharing some of that. We'll be following the rest of travels as you get across Montana and into Oregon.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care now.
Take care. Bye.
Well, that's just impressive. I just come away saying you have to understand that, well, all you have to do is look at the map. It's quite a distance. Zaz, anything else you would like to add to our edition today?
Enjoy the sunshine while it lasts.
Okay. And Terry.
Ditto.
Okay. Well, I want to thank both of you for participating in this week's edition of Valley Edition and look forward to doing something in throughout the summer and reflecting on the continued warmth and beauty of summer in Alaska. Have a good day.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.